We got a big fantasy baseball weekend coming up. Everybody's drafting. Everyone, including me. Al Heath, are you guys drafting this weekend?
Actually, I'm not, no.
I drafted every other day.
Yes, I'm drafting this weekend. Everybody's drafting this weekend.
Yeah, so, Al, come on.
Do my slow drafts count?
Yes.
I'm drafting this weekend.
Are you going to make a draft pick this weekend?
Yes.
Okay.
Wonderful. Well, obviously, big weekend, so we're here to help. This is our draft primer. We're going to go through basically all the stuff we've been talking about for the last few months in one fun little podcast for the next 45 minutes or so. We'll go through each position, give you our basic strategy, players we are targeting, how it might change in a deep league or a shallow league, put together our ideal pitching staff, yada, yada, yada. Also, it's Heath's turn to give us some players who are being overdrafted, some players who are being underdrafted, and we will get to emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com and tweets as well. So, Heath, you changed your team name? And
yep.
I don't get it, so please explain.
It really hurts my feelings because, you know, I was asked to change my team name because apparently my name is so dumb. So I changed it to what I thought was really clever. If you're Dono, you better call somebody.
And I don't know what that means.
You don't know what that means. And I guess the person, I'll give you a clue. Somebody that could tell you for sure what that means is Dave Richard.
If you don't know,
okay, because I get what it's supposed to be.
Yes,
I don't know what it's from, but with that clue, I'm guessing it's wrestling related.
Yes,
okay, that would explain my ignorance.
So it was WWE back in the day, and I think really better than my team name is definitely my avatar.
Yeah, what is that?
That is Giordano.
Really?
Being hazed by his teammates in a pink bunny costume.
Ah.
Outstanding work on the logo.
What's the wrestling reference?
There was a wrestler, Road Dogg, a tag team, and they added a little bit of profanity into it, but they would say, if you don't know, you better call somebody.
Okay. Well, look, you love Giordano Ventura. In fact, he's a player that you think is going too late. He's on your podcast league team. So I approve. Excellent team name. Job well done.
Thank you very much. I really feel better now.
I think it's very clever. I am not in love with my Occam's Azer. It was a play.
Oh,
it's a play
I think
solder.
That's great.
You like it? Okay. All right. I can keep it. I'm working on some team names for the weekend. I want to change a lot of my teams. But let's get to the news and notes, and then we can go through the position reviews with some strategies. Blah, blah, blah. Here we go. Drew Smyly. Positive bullpen session. Probably won't appear in any games this spring, so it's going to take a little bit of time. Any timetable for Drew Smyly, and are you at all hesitant to draft him?
A little hesitant. I did take him in our podcast listeners league, but I thought that I did so at a reasonable bargain. And no, there is no specific timetable, but it sounds like he won't be out for long.
Victor Martinez experienced some knee soreness. It does not seem like a big deal. He apparently is running with a hitch in his step, or a hitch in his giddy up, as they like to say. So, is anyone concerned about Victor Martinez? I feel like Heath better call someone.
I don't need to call someone. Somebody should have called me 2 weeks ago. I'm just shocked that Victor Martinez might have knee pain.
Right.
At 36 years old? This is weird. This is really, really weird. I would guess Victor Martinez is going to have... And the funny thing I think about that little news clip is... He's running with a hitch in his step.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's had that hitch for a few years.
But that's probably more encouraging, right? If you want to be encouraged, that's less of a new injury and more of just something he can deal with.
Yeah. This doesn't change a lot for me because I pretty much expected this.
Okay.
It seems like a non-story.
Okay.
And I understand Heath, where you're getting at, you know, he's older, coming back from another injury. I feel like I've discounted Martinez somewhat. But I don't know. I just another example, David Robertson now, you know, experiencing some soreness. and people asking about whether or not to be concerned about him. I mean, there might be a reason for great concern, but we don't know anything yet other than their soreness. So I feel like if you discount Robertson, if you're drafting today and you freak out and you think of the worst case scenario, you could be missing out on one of the five best closers. So it's just, this is not terribly reassuring for anybody who has to draft right now, but it's just risky.
Well, actually,
there's just not information out there.
I had actually forgotten. I mentioned yesterday that Jacoby Ellsbury was falling pretty far because people were worried about the oblique, but it looks like he could be ready for opening day or shortly thereafter. I had forgotten that last year Jacoby Ellsbury had an injury during spring training, missed, I think, a couple of weeks at the end of spring training, and then was ready for opening day. So spring training injuries, they happen, and we understandably make a lot out of it as drafters because you don't want to take a guy who's hurt. But I think actually sometimes it really could work in your favor. You get guys at a huge bargain. I feel like there's just not a lot going on right now, so these stories get over magnified sometimes.
Well, and again, and it's a big deal if you're in fantasy because if you know, this thing with Robertson or Ellsbury for that matter, you know, if it progresses in a way where they miss a lot of time, then it's a very big deal. But
right.
You know, you're just at this point, you just have to guess and ask yourself how much risk you want to take on.
Okay, fine. So if you're drafting today, would you take David Robertson or Zach Britton?
That's a good one because I have them ranked very similarly. You know what? I would take Britton, but that's kind of what I've been doing anyway because maybe that isn't such a good example because I think Britton is being underdrafted. And it's been a good move to wait on him anyway.
What about you, Heath?
I think I'd still like Robertson.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it doesn't change much for me for Robertson. I mean, I'm trying to think of another comparison. Maybe, I don't know, Rondon's probably too much of a step down. But I guess the point is just that if I had an opportunity to get Robertson without paying an exorbitant costs, I would still be willing to do it.
Sean Doolittle is making progress. Are you guys more optimistic about Sean Doolittle than you were when you first heard about the rotator cuff injury?
I'm still kind of scared. I mean, it doesn't sound good. You can make progress, but it's awfully late in the spring to be making progress.
Well, he's certainly not going to be ready now.
Right. But when is he going to be ready?
Yeah.
We don't have a timetable, right? Like, at all.
No, not that I've seen anything definitive. I don't know. Buck Showalter acknowledged that Kevin Gausman could go to the bullpen. We talked about that yesterday.
Dumb.
I drafted him in one league. It's not like I'm going to drop him even if he goes to the bullpen because I do not trust Ubaldo Jimenez to stay in the rotation if that's what happens. Right? I mean, like, he's a stash, right?
Yes.
Yeah, but it's so much easier to stash a guy that goes to AAA and starts. Because if he goes to the bullpen and pitches out of the bullpen for a couple of months, they're going to have to ramp him back up then, and so it's going to be even longer. At least if he was starting in AAA, he'd be ready whenever they needed him.
It's a good point. I would hope it's not a couple of months. I think you have to look back at Alex Wood last year, right? Went to the bullpen, then they sent him down, they stretched him out, and it was worth the wait to stash him. But you're right, Heath. It would be better if he was building up arm strength and building up his pitch count. Derek Holland got a bit of an injury at the shoulder soreness. He's fine. He'll be ready to start the Texas home opener. Not opening day. That's going to Yovani Gallardo. And Arizona catching prospect Peter O'Brien, who might be on your radar in a deeper league. He's playing some outfield because he's having trouble throwing to the pitcher. So when the Yankees traded him, it didn't seem like they thought Peter O'Brien could be a catcher. The Diamondbacks might be having the same thoughts, but he's catcher eligible. Could he be a guy that becomes an outfielder at some point in the big leagues this season, which would be great for him in fantasy?
This is terrible because the Diamondbacks have too many outfielders and they have no catchers. I mean, no you know, major league viable ones. They've got
it is
like
bad
eight,
for them.
You know, quad A catchers. So it's bad for them. And I mean, I think it's bad for O'Brien because, I don't think the signs seem to point away from him stepping into the catching job anytime soon, and that's where the opportunity is.
Are you guys ready to give the downloadable draft kit right now?
Sure.
That's, you know, what we're doing on the podcast. Well, here we go. We're going to go position by position. Tell me your philosophies, guys, at catcher. How do you draft catcher?
Well, I've passed up on the big names in pretty much every draft, every mock. No Posey. Actually, I take that back. I've got Mesoraco in a few leagues. Mm-hmm. So he seems to be the guy among the top catchers that's coming at a reasonable price. And for the most part, though, I'm waiting it out till Darnot or, in some cases, Miguel Montero.
Yeah.
I know.
I feel like my strategy keeps changing at catcher. Early in the draft season, I was taking Wieters because I was encouraged by his progress and I thought he was really a good value, and now I'm scared to death of him. And so there was a short period of time there where I was taking Gattis because he was like the fourth catcher off the board and I thought he was the second best catcher, but now he's the second catcher off the board. So I'm probably kind of like Al, just waiting.
Actually, I think what you mentioned there about Gattis is actually relevant also for Lucroy. Spring training injury has pushed his value down, and I think it's much ado about nothing.
Yeah, that's probably true. Mm-hmm.
So Lucroy, you could get for a good value.
And I think I got him in our NL-only league, if I remember right.
One of the points I wanted to make again and again and again, and look, I don't know how many of our listeners listen to every podcast and remember every word, so I think a lot of things are worth repeating, but... For me, I feel like number one catcher, wait, get value. Whoever you take, just make sure you're getting a good pick. There's no need to reach in a 12-team league or shallower. But in a two-catcher league, we've said it a lot, it gets pretty thin. So you probably should invest a little bit more in your second catcher. You don't want to take the 20th catcher off the board. Might want to have two top 15 or top 16 guys.
That's pretty much my MO in a two-catcher league, is bookend guys who are ranked around like 10th to 12th for me. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So basically I have two low end number one catchers.
Okay. If you were going to go for like the 14th, 15th best catcher, I like Mike Zunino in Roto, not in points, but in Roto, I like Zunino, who was a top 12 catcher in that format last year and he hit under 200. Who do you guys like as a second catcher to target?
For me, it's definitely Zunino. He's my favorite one.
Okay. Cool.
He's my second favorite. I think you know who my favorite is.
Are you going to say Miguel Montero?
Wilson Ramos.
Oh, Wilson Ramos.
No, Montero's there too.
Yeah, I know.
Those three.
Ramos is a good call for sure. All right, first base. How about Heath? Why don't you kick off your strategy at first base?
Well, it seems like, and I don't know necessarily for sure why this is, but I end up with a whole lot of Paul Goldschmidt, which makes the strategy really, really easy. I think the reason for that is I'd rather have Goldschmidt than Miggy, and I'm not going to take Clayton Kershaw. So there's like a 3 or 4 pick window there where I can get Goldschmidt, and so that's probably why I end up with him a lot.
Well, that's I guess a little self-explanatory. Let's say you don't have a top six pick.
Okay, I don't have a top six pick. I don't really like the value of where a lot of these guys are going. I feel like you're right when you say it's not as deep as it's been, mm-hmm. and that's causing some people to go earlier than maybe they should. So I have ended up waiting quite a bit at the position. I like a couple of guys that have dual position eligibility in Chris Davis and Brandon Moss, and I think they're being way underdrafted. So those are the guys that I end up with a lot of times.
But do you feel like if you draft Chris Davis that you really should be playing him at third base?
Ideally, but there's a pretty good chance if I waited at first base that long, I may have Arenado.
Mm-hmm. That's true. It's true.
So if I have Arenado, I can put Davis at first. I feel good about that.
Okay. Al, how do you feel?
I'd like to get my first baseman early, which seems sort of counterintuitive to me because it's the deepest position. But I'm not really comfortable if I'm waiting past the drop off. Which I really see, I'd say really Martinez. You could say Freddie Freeman because I've actually got those two valued similarly. So, okay, beyond my top eight, I wouldn't be comfortable having Pujols as my first baseman. My fallback option is Votto, but I never get him. I don't think I have gotten him in any drafts. But he's the guy that I think falls outside my top eight who has the greatest upside to finish in the top eight.
I think it's the most fascinating position, honestly, because Goldschmidt, Cabrera, Abreu, Encarnacion, Rizzo. That's five guys right there. I don't think I don't have a problem with any of them in the first round. Do you guys, Goldschmidt, Cabrera, Abreu, Encarnacion, and Rizzo?
I don't.
No, they should all be taken in the first round.
So if you get one of those guys, then you know you're set at first base. If you don't get one of those guys, I never know when I feel good about taking Freddie Freeman, Adrian Gonzalez, Albert Pujols, Joey Votto, Prince Fielder, and Victor Martinez.
And see, that's the group of guys that I don't ever get a piece of because mm-hmm. they seem to always go earlier, more comfortable that I'm taking them.
Right. Yeah, and I know.
I think there's a perception thing with these guys. And I understand with V-Mart, if you're concerned about the age, you're concerned about the injury. I get that. I still think that, I've wound up with Martinez in a few leagues because I do think that even when you discount him, there's a lot of production left over. But Adrian Gonzalez, I think, just because he had a series of really, for him, subpar years, that the shine's really come off of him. But I think he's a sneaky value.
Well, Al, I don't know that I trust him to have a great batting average anymore because last year he was terrible against lefties, and I don't know if that's the start of something with him. I guess here's my thing with Gonzalez is like, since I don't think he's going to hit 30 home runs, maybe he hits like 280, 290 with 25 homers, drives in a lot of runs. Like, can I get that from Steve Pierce? Can I get similar production from Lucas Duda? Can I get something similar from Brandon Moss later? Like, I don't feel like I'm going to be missing out on a potentially elite guy with Adrian Gonzalez. I feel like at best he's a steady guy, but other people behind him could catch up, which is why I never draft him. And that's kind of how I feel about everyone in that tier.
That's fair. But just, you know, one guy that you named who I do like, Lucas Duda, I easily go with Gonzalez there. And granted, I'd have to invest a lot more because Duda's going pretty late. But, there's a question of, you know, can Duda do that again? And what kind of batting average is he going to give you? I mean, I feel pretty confident that Gonzalez is going to give you a much higher batting average than Duda will. So, and they could take a number of guys, Pierce, and I'm going to have similar types of concerns.
Yeah. It's just, it's not like there, if you're in a 12 team league, it's not like, there are 12 that you're necessarily going to love as your starting first baseman. Maybe it's easier in a 10-team league. Do you guys see any differences in like a 14-team league or deeper at first base?
I think it is easier in a 10-team league. I think you can definitely afford to wait longer, and I think those guys are still getting drafted pretty early. But there's not going to be 20 of them taken. I guess it depends on what type of league you're playing in. But
yeah,
if it's a 10-team with a corner infielder, then it might be a little more of a concern.
Well, I'll say this about a deeper league at first base. I think that's probably, Al, you said it's the deepest position. In deeper leagues, that's where you might actually benefit from the depth of first base. Because if you take the 14th best first baseman and you wait at that position, well, you could, I mean, Prince Fielder is 14th for Scott in Roto. Adam LaRoche is 14th for Al in Roto. But you could end up with Mark Trumbo or Matt Adams. What I'm saying is the 14th best first baseman might be a whole heck of a lot better than the 14th best second baseman or the 14th best shortstop. So you might actually benefit from the depth there, where if you wait on that position, you've got a better chance of getting a high upside guy late, I think, in a 14-team league. I think what I'm trying to say is I'd be more likely actually to wait at first base in a deeper league than a shallower league.
It sort of depends on how the early part of the draft or the auction plays out, because I really ideally want to get one of the top five guys that you mentioned. I'm okay with the top eight. I think if those have passed me by, then it absolutely pays to wait.
Let's move on to second base, Heath. What do you do at second base? What do you like to do?
Well, just like I said, if I have a pick in around 3 through 6, then I'm going to take Goldschmidt. If I'm in the bottom half in the first round, I'm generally looking to get Jose Altuve. If I miss him, I'm not paying up probably until we get to Brian Dozier in the fourth. And if I don't get him, I'm just going to wait at the position.
I could wind up anywhere on the second base spectrum, really, because I love Altuve. I'm certainly happy to get him. I could see targeting him in the latter part of the first round. I think Dozier sometimes goes too late. I think sometimes Kipnis goes too late. But then again, if I miss out on that whole bunch, there's not a lot that separates out the guys from about 10th to maybe 18th or so for me. So I can wait a long, long time. And in fact, I did that in our podcast league draft the other night. I wound up with Neil Walker because I saw there were four teams left in the late going that still had to get a second baseman, and my top four were all kind of ranked the same. So I was happy with whoever I wound up with.
So if you were in a deeper league, though, would you be comfortable waiting and taking Marcus Semien as your starter, or Chase Utley as your starter, or Jeanette or something like that, or is that too risky?
No, not at all, and that's exactly where I wound up in some of my deeper
leagues.
So
you're cool with that?
I'm totally cool with that.
I still like getting Rendon. I'd rather have Rendon in the second round than Altuve in the first round.
I admit I'm a little scared right now for Rendon, and I mean he was such a smart pick in an NL only league because of the drop off there,
and dual position eligibility,
and that too,
which
you know.
Is great.
But of course, I'm not to say that he doesn't have great value in mixed leagues. Also, I'm just saying in the NL is like you've got to get Rendon.
Right.
But now, you know, with this injury, given his injury history, it just doesn't take a lot for me to get scared off from Rendon, given the injury history that he has.
Yeah, I'm not taking Rendon in the second anymore. I kind of was with you, Adam, earlier in the spring, but I'm not taking him in the second right now.
But they said he's going to be fine. I mean, he could be back in the first week of the season, and he's been healthy as a major leaguer. Are you just not buying it? You think it's too optimistic?
There's a decent chance that you're right, but with a second round pick, that's just too much risk for me.
Okay, I prefer it in the late second round, yeah. So shallow leagues, 10-team leagues are shallower. Any thoughts on second base? Any changes?
I would say so because, yeah, you know, a lot of those names that you threw out there, Semien, Jeanette, those guys who I have wound up with in deeper leagues, Semien's, you know, I'm really good with him as a fallback option even in a standard league, but I'd prefer because there's good depth up at the top. You know, I'll put a little more energy in trying to get Jason Kipnis or somebody like that.
I think in a 10-team league, some of the guys that we kind of like maybe as sleepers in a deeper league aren't really even in play.
No, that's
so,
right.
So
right.
You may want to try a little harder to get somebody a little higher on your board.
Sure. And I do want to just repeat something we've been saying. Don't undervalue the steals guys in points leagues because Dustin Pedroia is going ahead of D. Gordon in points leagues and obviously not in Roto. But D. Gordon, I think, right now is great ADP in points leagues. Appropriate, maybe a little bit too high in Roto, but you know he still could be very, very good for you in a points league. Third base. This is my favorite position. I will keep it simple and shut up and let you guys do your thing. I think there are 15 third basemen that I'd be cool with, and I never reach for it. I'm not opposed to taking Donaldson or Arenado or Beltre early or whatever, or Rendon, but... Man, I love the fallback options in the mid-rounds, and even to go as far as Josh Harrison or Chris Bryant later. I love third base, and it's a lot deeper than I thought it was. And not everybody's going to be good in there, but you don't have to take, like David Wright, the risky guys too early.
Yeah, no, I agree with most of what you said. I mean, there is a lot of depth kind of in the top and the middle there, and there's a lot to like, and then there's that sort of cluster from about 6 to 12 where almost everybody's an injury risk, but they can come cheap, but also because I think owners tend to view them similarly, that once one goes, like whether it's Wright or Zimmerman or Chris Davis or whoever, once one goes, they all go.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a big risk to be left high and dry, and I don't really like what I think of as the post-Josh Harrison options because he's kind of the end of that tier for me.
But where is Harrison in your rankings?
In Roto, which is what I'm looking at, I've got him 14th. I'm guessing points I might have him a spot or two higher.
No, you have him 14th there. Okay, so there's 14 for you. But you have Carpenter right after him, and I'm totally fine with Carpenter, even in Roto.
I'm unenthused about him in Roto leagues. In points leagues, I definitely want Matt Carpenter.
Yeah. Heath, your thoughts on third base?
I'm not quite as enthused by the depth, I guess, is the way I'd say. I'd really like to get Donaldson in the second if I can. I was getting Arenado in the fourth a lot, but in the last few drafts I've been in, he's gone in the third. So
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe everybody's listening to me saying that he's better than Adrian Beltre.
I think we're flip-flopping on that now. Yeah, I think he's going to go ahead of Adrian Beltre pretty consistently now.
Yeah. And so I really struggle to take Arenado in the third. That's probably not going to happen because that's a lot of times where I like to get my first pitcher, if not the fourth.
Right.
So, I mean, if we're looking at guys that I like late, again, we're back to Chris Davis. I do like David Wright, where he's going. and Matt Carpenter. I took him in our podcast league.
Sure. How about guys like in deeper leagues, maybe if you need a corner infielder in a 12-team league or something like that, Chase Headley, Aramis Ramirez, Simeon, Plouffe, Prado, Sandoval, Bogarts, Castellanos. Are these guys good options?
Why did you stop just shy of Alex Rodriguez?
I'm not buying it at all. I don't think he's going to have a good year.
I think there's a high potential for disaster there. And entertainment, and no matter what happens, it's going to be entertaining. But the list of names you just read off could very easily include Alex Rodriguez, I feel like, because there's a lot of question marks around that list of names.
Oh, yeah. Alex Rodriguez is 39 years old, and he'll be 40 in July, and he did not have one at-bat last year in 2013. I'm trying to look it up.
It feels so weird that I'm the one talking about the guy that's almost 40.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense.
No thanks for me on A-Rod.
It's a real endorsement of the other guys then on the list, I guess.
Well, I think that's what it is. I mean, I like Bogarts. So if I am out of that list.
But if you're drafting him, you're going to play him at shortstop, I would assume.
Yes.
Yeah. That's why I'm not holding out for him at third base.
Okay, how about shortstop, guys? Go for it.
This is where I wait. Because I rarely wind up with the top guys. And then once you get past the big four of Tulo, Reyes, Desmond, and Hanley, it really is just a mishmash to me. I don't have a strong preference for any of these guys.
Let's go through the first round, guys. We got Trout in some order. Trout, McCutchen, Stanton, Goldschmidt, Cabrera, Kershaw. That's pretty much been our consensus top six.
Right.
Who's seven? When do we say Troy Tulowitzki's name, in your opinion?
I'll answer the seven. For me, in a points league, that's been Bautista. And in Roto, that's been Altuve. And Tulo, probably 11 or 12.
Yeah, I think Tulo should be near that turnout. I've seen him fall well past that in several drafts. And if I can get him in the end of the second round, I'm glad to take him.
Well, you're not. That's pretty late.
But, yeah, it is.
Okay.
I as far as that question of who's seven, I'm not opposed to taking Altuve there.
Oh, man. I think you guys are crazy, but... But okay. So, yeah, shortstop's really bad after that top four. I had been targeting Danny Santana. I'm a little bit more scared now. And what I did notice from the podcast league, the one shortstop league, is I do want to wait, but I probably waited too long, and I ended up with J.J. Hardy. I was the last person to take a shortstop. Some people had taken two shortstops by the time I even took my first, so I probably should have pulled the trigger on a guy like Xander Bogaerts earlier. Or Gene Segura a little bit earlier. Guys with more upside than Hardy. Hardy does have some upside if he can return to form. Deeper league, shallower leagues. Do things change a lot with shortstop?
I haven't found the league format unless Tulo falls where I'm paying up for shortstop. I've drafted in 10 team and much deeper, and I haven't found anyone that I'm paying up for any other shortstops.
Yeah, I'll agree with that, and even in terms of just the late fallback options, it really doesn't change that much for me.
I would say that Tulo, Hanley, and Reyes, everybody knows they're risky to different degrees, and I am much more likely to take them in a 10-team league than a 14-team league, where it's easy. You know, 10-team league, it's easier to compensate for injuries. You don't need as much roster balance. You want more studs, I think. So I'm more willing to gamble just in general in shallower formats. Outfield. To me, it depends really a lot on whether or not you're in a 3-outfielder league or a 5-outfielder league. It turns the position from pretty shallow in 3-outfielder leagues to, I don't know, medium depth in a 5-outfielder league. And I would say if you're in a 3-outfielder league, do not fill up that number 3-outfielder spot too quickly because there's good late-round value. Now you guys can talk about outfielders.
Okay, yeah, and I completely ignore that advice because in the three outfielder leagues, I always turn around pretty quickly from my number two outfielder to get the number three outfielder. And the logic, part of the logic there, really two things. One is that because I don't, a lot of times an outfielder is also my utility player.
Or yeah,
I probably
should have
said that
that's
the other
true way.
Yeah. So just for the most recent example in our podcast league draft, I took I'm trying to remember who the third outfielder was. I took Holiday second, and I forgot who I took third, but I took Soler as my utility. And I grabbed that third guy quickly, knowing that I was eyeing Soler as a utility guy.
Why wouldn't you just make Soler your number three outfielder?
Because then I'm downgrading utility. Because I could wait longer to get Soler, and then I get Soler.
Well,
and I mean, it depends if there's somebody, I don't know, David Ortiz maybe, or a good first baseman that's in that pool. Then yeah, I could see filling the utility first, and then but that's just not the way it's played out. So that's one reason. And the other is I think there is a pretty healthy drop off after the top 40 or so outfielders. So I don't want to wait too long.
Like there is, but at the same time, it's a deep position that if you're in a three outfielder league, there are always guys on the waiver wire. You know
right,
what I mean? Like I'd rather invest mid round picks in the shallower positions. And Al, I'm being a hypocrite because I think I filled up my third outfield spot pretty quickly in that podcast league too. But it was just because I was looking. I didn't love anyone, and JD Martinez was sitting there, and I was like, it's just, I don't know what it was. Maybe it was round 8 or something.
Yeah,
and
I was like,
I have to take him here.
Yeah.
But ordinarily, I wouldn't.
And I just remembered, I feel bad for this, that the mystery third outfielder I couldn't remember was Cousin Melky.
Yeah, so, it's a good pick.
But that illustrates my point, because I've got him 24th, and, you know, if I'm waiting for, I don't know, the Cole Calhouns of the world as my third outfielder, thinking, well, I can replace Calhoun pretty easily off of waivers, I'm really sacrificing a lot of production there.
No, you make Soler your third outfielder, and you make Calhoun your utility.
Right, and the drop off from Melky to Soler is I'm expecting that's going to be pretty substantial.
Fine, then make Melky your third outfielder and wait longer for utility.
No matter how you slice that up, though,
I know.
I'm sacrificing value.
Heath, go ahead, man.
I think a really good point was made just a couple of minutes before we got into this whole Soler thing. Adam, you were talking about your strategy with outfield, and then you talked about how something happened on draft day, and I didn't follow my strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what people need to do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to adjust to what league you're drafting in that day. Because if you get rigid in your approach and you think, I'm always going to do this, you're going to have a suboptimal approach in almost every draft.
Who are the guys that you have continued to find yourself drafting? For me, it's definitely JD Martinez. And I wish I had been drafting Mookie Betts, but he goes a little bit earlier than I think he will. But I feel like I should probably make more of an effort. But who are the guys you end up with? Heath, I'll start with you.
The funny thing is, I'm ending up a lot of times with the Rockies outfielders not named Cargo.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know necessarily for sure why that is. It's not an intentional thing so much.
A lot of Drew Stubbs for you.
No, a lot more Dickerson and Blackman. I think I maybe did draft Drew Stubbs once in the NL only.
Oh, I think Drew Stubbs is a great pick in NL only.
But
he's only a predictable cargo injury away from being a must own.
Exactly. I mean, he's going to play. It's kind of, we were talking about this earlier off the podcast about Jerod Dyson, and he's going to play a bunch too, because we know that those outfielders are going to get hurt. Another guy, and we talked about him with first base, but multi-position eligibility is Brandon Moss.
Mm-hmm.
You know how much I love him.
Yeah. Okay. Al, how about some guys you typically get?
Well, you know, now that Heath's in the fold here at CBS, something's going to have to give, because I wind up with Corey Dickerson just about every time. So he's a favorite. George Springer, big shock there. Get him a lot. One of those two is often my number one outfielder. Sometimes number two, though, because I've also wound up with Stanton in a fair number of drafts and auctions. And then deeper down, I'm not sure there's a guy or bunch of guys that I get all that consistently.
That's okay. I look at Harper a lot. I think people are pretty down on him, it seems, and I still think there's a chance. He's only 22 years old. Could have a monster year. And Heath, Al likes Springer a lot. You think Springer is actually being drafted too early. He's going in the sixth round in points league, the third round in Roto. What are your thoughts on Springer?
And mostly when I say he's being drafted too early, it comes down to that Roto. The third round to me, I mean, and I want to clarify, I'm a George Springer fan. I think he's going to be really good. I'm not sure he's going to be a third-round outfielder this year. And I kind of like what I said with Rendon, there's a decent chance that he's not having major injury problems, but it's too much risk for me in the second. Springer's strikeouts really scare me. We talked several times on this podcast about second-year guys that the league's kind of adjusted to a little bit. He struck out that much before they adjusted to him.
Yeah. Yeah, he was very streaky last year. Okay. NL only, I noticed, guys, we did an NL only Roto draft last week. It got really thin at outfield after like the first 10 or so. Maybe more like the first 12 to 14, but then after that, yeah, it's really stretching. It's like you got to be excited about Marcelo Zuna. Well, he's not bad or anything, but I don't know. There was a big drop off, I thought, in NL only. So maybe you want to look at getting a second outfielder kind of early there. We're going to talk about our ideal pitching staffs in a second with starting pitchers, but how about relief pitchers, closers? This is so format-dependent. Do you need saves? Are SPARPs part of the equation? Do you need two relievers per team? Do you need three closers per team? It really depends on the depth of your league, but what's your general strategy, guys, with closers?
I generally go early or wait a really long time. I'm not drafting very many closers in that middle tier. I've had Holland. I haven't had Kimbrel yet. I'm just worried he's not going to have enough leads to protect.
I'm so opposite of you.
Yeah. I've had Holland and Chapman a little bit, and then I've had a lot of Joaquin Soria late.
Okay. Al?
Yeah. No, I have never been the guy to get one of the big three. Not this year. Maybe because, well, I don't know. I was going to say, I was pretty big on going after Kimbrel a couple years ago when he was a clear elite by himself, but I'm not sure that's really the reason. I think there's a lot of potential value, so I'm willing to wait and fill other needs. And I think I do wind up in the middle tier a lot because then what happens is I wait, but then I really want to have two solid save sources. And those do dry up fairly quickly because the bottom third, at least, of the closer pool is very, very iffy, and I don't really want to have to rely on any of them.
If you're in a 10-team league with two closer spots, two relief pitcher spots, I mean, that's where I wouldn't necessarily wait. You know, if somebody fell to my lap, sure, but do you guys agree? I mean, that's a scenario where I just can't see myself. 10-team league. 20 closers go. Maybe your SPARPs are in the equation too if it's a points league. Like, there's just no need to reach at that point.
No, I completely agree
right
there.
Yeah. Yes.
And I where I have gone very aggressive is for Carrasco and Wood in points leagues or head to head.
Why are people taking Carrasco ahead of Wood?
I think it's a toss up. I think it's a toss up between the two because sure, Wood is much more proven as a starter, and it's not that he's got a ton of experience, but he is more proven as a starter than Carrasco. But based on what Carrasco did as a starter last year and how dominant he was in relief, which you know may or may not translate, I think his upside's higher.
I don't disagree with that, but I think Wood was so good last year, and I guess I wouldn't fight it, but to me,
if you were worried about the risk of Carrasco regressing, then, yeah, I could see that. I'm fairly confident. I mean, because when somebody is just that good, and it's not over, you know, three or four starts. It's over a couple of months. I buy into it. I think it's pretty legit. It's not just kind of good, just a little better than before. I mean, like, absolutely dominant, Cy Young level kind of performance.
Well, Alex Wood was like a 2.275. I forgot his numbers. I'll look him up. But he had an ERA under 3 and a strikeout per inning. I feel like if you get that from Carrasco, you're going to be fired up.
Well, that's kind of what I'm saying is I think Carrasco's upside's higher, too. I agree on that. But I think there's enough of an unknown there that I'd still probably take Wood first, because Wood was really, really good.
Yeah. And don't forget about these guys in roto leagues, too, where they're not sparps. They're just, you know, starting pitchers.
Right.
Heath, let's talk about how you would build your ideal pitching staff based on ADP, who you'd take and when you take them.
Well, and some of these, of course, are going to depend on what kind of league you're in. It seems like in some of these points leagues, the pitchers just go off the board so quickly. That happened in our podcast league, and I had to take Greinke in the third. But Zach Greinke's a guy I'm targeting because I think he could be a top 10 pitcher, but he's not being drafted as one.
Mm-hmm.
And there's really only one pitcher I'm probably going to take in the second. I'm not going to take Kershaw in the first, so I'm not going to get him. I will take Scherzer in the second, just because I think he has the best chance outside of Kershaw of being the best pitcher in baseball this year. A guy I generally, if I can get Greinke or somebody of that ilk, then I'm not probably going to take my second pitcher until the eighth or ninth. Some guys that I like later, Tyson Ross, Garrett Richards, Yordan Aventura. I do like Pfister, especially where he's going. And then I like to try to get Taijuan Walker, Paxton, or Gausman late, and it's probably going to be Taijuan or Paxton now.
Yeah, so just to recap, based on ADP, you would do your staff like this. Greinke in the fourth, Tyson Ross in the eighth, Garrett Richards in the ninth, Ventura in the 12th, Pfister in the 13th, Fires in the 15th, and then one or two of Paxton, Walker, or Gausman late. Al, your ideal pitching staff, sir.
All right, well, I've got Cueto as my ace, and I think I've only actually drafted him once, but just in terms of in mapping this out, I've looked for the ends of tiers, and obviously in an actual draft, it doesn't always work out that way. But I think Cueto could give me potentially the best value. I could get him in round three, so he'll be my ace of my ideal staff. Then a guy I do wind up with a lot is Phil Hughes, because I value him more highly than I think just about everybody. So he falls, and I'm able to take him, and I'm happy to use him as a number two starter, so I can address other needs rounds 4, 5, 6, and not worry about my second starter. And after that, pretty quick succession, I like Waka, Dallas Keuchel, who goes much, much later than I think he's going to return in terms of value. So even though I'd feel comfortable using him as a third starter, I could draft him as a fourth or fifth. And Michael Pineda, who's still going pretty late.
Round 14.
Yeah, and Mike Fiers. So those are, you know, all four of those guys, Waka, Keuchel, Pineda, Fiers, I think are being underdrafted. And so I look to them as fallback targets who can allow me to address other needs.
And then you said you want one of Tillman, Holland, Gausman, or Jimmy Nelson late. My ideal pitching staff, I think there are 9 aces. They are Kershaw at number 1, and then the next 8 in any order: Felix, Sale, Price, Kluber, Scherzer, Strasburg, Cueto, Bumgarner. I want one of them. I find myself with Kluber the most, so Kluber in round 3, Tehran in round 7, Carrasco round 8, Gio Gonzalez round 10, Michael Pineda 14, Chris Archer round 15, Smiley 18, and then I'll take Kane, Walker, Gausman, Paxton, Shelby Miller, late. I'm actually in a 16-team league. I wanted to make a point that even in a deeper league, you don't have to reach for starting pitching. I'm in a 16-team league with 10 fantasy points for a win, so that's a big stat. I took Kluber in round 1 with the 12th overall pick, Harvey in round 3, Gio in round 6, Fiers in round 11, Paxton in round 14. Kluber, Harvey, Gio, Fiers, Paxton. I actually wouldn't mind that in a 12-team league. But in a 16-team league, that's my starting 5. I wish that was like 5 of 7 guys for me in a 12-team league. But you could still, even in a deeper league, still very good values for pitchers. Heath, I do apologize. We kind of ran out of time for the drafted too early, drafted too late, as I have a lot of emails and tweets I wanted to read.
That's okay. I will. The podcast listeners come first.
There's only one thing I wanted to get from you, though. You think that Madison Bumgarner is going too early. He's going round 2 in points, round 3 in roto. He's the 8th starting pitcher off the board in points and 7th in roto. Madison Bumgarner.
And this goes a little bit to, I think, a lot of starting pitchers are going too early, but Bumgarner's going before Kluber? No, I don't think he should. I think there's people overvaluing his postseason performance, and the 270 innings that he threw last year scares me to death.
Yeah, okay.
We talked offline, and I think I said I was happy with where Bumgarner was being drafted. I don't think I realized he was going ahead of Kluber. So I think that's, yeah, that's a little too early. But I think in general, he's in the right neighborhood.
Well, Kluber's the ninth starting pitcher off the board. He's the last one of those top nine, my top nine. I don't know.
So that's really, I think Kluber's being underdrafted.
Yeah, then. Yeah. Okay, some team names I thought of yesterday while we were doing our show. Solar Power. What do you guys think?
It's okay.
You know, it's like solar power, but solar.
Yeah. Oh, well, we got it.
Well, now I.
We talked about this one, but this is Jock Peterson with the Cameron icon. How about I'm Avi Sailing Away?
Good name. Oh, no. Inspired by a song that I absolutely despise.
It's a terrible song. Well,
if you would have sang it, then I might have given you bonus points.
No,
if
thanks.
You can hit that note.
Well, I was going to say, he might have to go get a vice grip or something first.
Yeah,
no thanks.
That song.
Ashton Gilmore on Twitter said his team name this year is Don't Blame Me, I Voted for Kodos, which I think is hilarious. It is a Simpsons reference. It's totally random, but it's very funny. Good job. All right, some emails and tweets. Let's try to go through these quickly here. From Mike, Fires or Paxton, head-to-head points?
Fires.
You don't have to make this decision, do you? Isn't Paxton being drafted well after Fires?
Yes, but
okay.
Let's make it anyway.
Fires. Okay, Fires.
Okay.
Sorry.
Mikey G, where would you rank Wood and Carrasco in leagues without Sparps? So where do you rank Wood and Carrasco in Roto leagues, basically?
I know I've got Carrasco ahead of them. In fact, I'm not sure.
I mean, they're right around.
I was going to say, maybe back-to-back or close to it.
They're third starters.
You have Carrasco 21, and you have Alex Wood 27 now.
And now I see that, yes.
So they're top 30 guys for sure. Here's Chris. Where would you rank Mookie Betts at second base and Carlos Santana at catcher in Roto?
Carlos Santana is still catcher eligible in some leagues?
Yep.
I think in Yahoo leagues. And I think Betts is second base eligible in Yahoo
Yeah,
leagues.
Actually, I get that Betts question a lot. Which makes me all the more frustrated that I can't remember the answer that I've given over those many times.
All right, guys, we'll do an exercise. I'm going to read second baseman. You tell me when you'd slot in Betts. Roto, Altuve, Rendon. Uh-oh, I lost my place on the page. Altuve, Rendon, Cano, Dozier, Gordon, Kinsler, Kipnis, Kendrick, Wong, Walker. Zobrist.
Are we supposed to jump in here?
Yeah, yes.
I think it was after, or maybe right around Wong.
That's what I'm thinking, too.
Before Howie Kendrick, right?
Not in Roto.
Really?
But I've been saying I think Kendrick is wildly undervalued in Roto.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, no, I'd go Kendrick over Betts for second base, but probably right after Colton Wong.
Heath, would you go Kendrick or Betts?
I'd go Betts just for upside.
Now let's do this exercise with Carlos Santana at catcher. You guys jump in when you think Carlos Santana's name should appear in the rankings. Okay, everyone?
I got it.
Okay. All right, Posey, Gattis.
Oh, really? Stop there. Yeah.
Number two?
And actually points, probably number one.
Heath?
No, I wasn't going to stop you until after LaCroix.
Posey, Gattis, Mesoraco, LaCroix, Santana?
Yeah.
Sean wants to know, how early should Chris Bryant be targeted in a keeper league? 3 years max.
What round?
Yeah.
The way things are trending, he's going to go, I mean, he just keeps going earlier every draft we have.
Yeah, but I mean, without overpaying, I can't see taking him before the fifth round. Because we're talking about a startup, right? I mean, this isn't like a supplemental.
Right.
You know, where you already have your core. I mean, you got to draft some of your core players.
You think in a keeper league where you get to keep him for 3 years, he's going to make it to the fifth round, though?
No, I'm not going to get him.
Okay.
But that's
okay.
But if it you know, in some alternative universe where that happens, then I'm willing to draft him.
If you want to get him, you probably have to target third round.
Yes, okay. I would agree with that.
So here's a question from Seth. He says, I'm drafting this Saturday, first year of a keeper league. He has the 12th pick in a 12-team league. It's 6x6 categories with OPS and strikeout-to-walk ratio. He wants to know how to balance in a keeper league drafting, you know, guys for this year and guys for the future. Like, what do you do at the 12-13 turn?
And how many guys does he get to keep? Initial doesn't say, does it?
It does not.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sort of digesting all this information
right
here.
There's a lot. And I like this because a lot of times we get emails and we don't have all the information.
Let me ask you this. Would you take Yasiel Puig over Jose Bautista in a keeper league? I know you wouldn't in a redraft league. Would you do it in a keeper league?
I don't think so. And I get the feeling that I weight current year value higher than a lot of people, maybe most people do in keeper leagues. I really do try to – the only exception where I really don't focus on playing for this year is just if I've got an absolute rebuild squad and I know I've got no hope.
Well, and I think in a true keeper league, I mean, if he's keeping 10 guys or more, my strategy is – and I would like to be really good or really bad.
Yeah.
And so what I usually do in a startup is I will undervalue the future because I think you can have a really good chance to win your first year.
So at what point do you start taking picks, you know, eyeing the future?
I can't give you a round number, but I think somewhere, you know, in the middle where you don't see much separation in any of the positional tiers. And you think, okay, well, I can wait on all these other positions. So, you know, I'm going for upside here. Maybe I could circle back and get, you know, get a safer guy in a couple rounds.
I would say at the point where I stop feeling like there are guaranteed good players that are being overlooked because of their age.
I'll just add one thing because this will be a decision a lot of people make at the 12th pick, 13th pick. There's no way I'm drafting Felix Hernandez in a keeper league. That's one guy I'd cross off my list. I'm not sure if you guys feel the same way, but a lot of good pitchers there. I'm going to take someone younger. Like in a keeper league, I'm taking Kluber over Felix.
Well, and again, this is offline. At first, I was thinking this is something I said here, but it's something I actually said just before the podcast that there are very few starting pitchers, really good ones, that don't scare me now.
Yeah.
So I don't think I hold that against Felix any more than I do against, you know, Chris Sale or Corey Kluber. You know, for Kluber, it's a case of a shorter track record. With Sale, it's the perennial concern about injury.
Scherzer then, Al. It's a good point. I'll take Scherzer, number two pitcher in a keeper league.
Oh, yes.
Or Strasburg. But I'd say Scherzer.
I'm good with that.
Okay.
But Felix, for me, is ahead of Sale and he's ahead of Kluber because their concerns are more concerning to me than the fact that he's just thrown a lot.
Yeah. And so that's kind of poised to get. If I miss out on Scherzer, I'm not going to discount those other guys very much, if at all.
Kelly asked, why is Al so low on Zach Greinke?
Yes, Al.
You know, actually, Scott really hit the nail on the head a few podcasts ago, and it's the inconsistency with strikeouts. He's in a cluster of guys where some of them that I have ranked around him are maybe have a little less strikeout upside, but if I take sort of the median of where I think Greinke is going to wind up in a given year, he's in the same place, and I'm not going to rank him with the guys that I think get a strikeout per year pretty much every year.
Mike and Maywood. Yeah, that works. Mike and Maywood, New Jersey, rank these guys for 2015. John Gray, Anthony DeSclafani, Jesse Hahn, Raisel Iglesias.
Gosh. Because I just wrote about how Hahn's a bust for me this year. But I'm tempted to put Iglesias first, but we don't know who he is. So I probably would draft. Okay, I'll just because it's draft order. So I'll go ahead. I'm going to put Iglesias first, then Hahn, Desclafani, and Gray.
I'm going to defer to Al on this one.
Okay.
Punt.
Couple more questions. Sorry, I was just going to speed it up to finish things up here. Two closer questions. Don King wants to know, AL only Roto, who's going to close for the Rays with McGee out, and when do you think McGee will be back?
Oh, I think Kevin Cash is going to order himself up a box burger.
I could go for one of those.
Yeah.
When do you think McGee will be back? I think by the end of the month, maybe? By the end of April?
That's last I read was that.
I was guessing mid-May, but just because a lot of times on pitchers, I'll guess a couple weeks after they tell us it's going to be, because they don't, they're not going to rush him.
Yeah,
they definitely won't need to. And I'm very concerned. I think McGee is a top flight closer, but I think Boxberger could be totally awesome. And, you know, McGee is a lefty. They may be more comfortable. Cash might be more comfortable with Boxberger.
Oh, you could say the same exact thing and replace the names in Oakland with Clippard and Doolittle.
Yeah.
Right? I kind of feel like Tyler Clippard might be great value, guys.
I agree.
There's a chance, yes.
Joel Nickell. And he's not officially the closer there, by the way, Clippard. I think they're going to name somebody soon, right? He hasn't been named the closer while Doolittle's out. That would seem to be the best guess.
Well, yeah, because actually I saw an update from a few weeks back that said it was down to Clippard and Ryan Cook. And Ryan Cook's been sent down, so.
Okay.
It seems like a pretty safe situation there for Clippard.
Joel Nichols, last question here. Would you drop Sergio Romo for Andrew Miller? I drafted Romo thinking he may get the job back. Who'd you guys rather have?
I would rather have Miller. I would do that in a second.
Yes, for sure.
Okay, then. Fellas, thank you very much. I hope this was helpful for everyone. And I'm sorry about David in New York City who had a Broad City reference in his email that I didn't read, but hats off to you for watching Broad City.
You should also apologize to Nick for not answering his Ventura question.
I think we talked enough about Donald Ventura. Heath and Al, thanks, guys.
Thank you, Adam.
Thank you.
Listen, for everybody out there, we got a lot of fantasy baseball to talk about during the season as well. We're not here just to help you prep for your draft. We'll have FanDuel advice and who to pick up, who to drop, who to start, who to sit, all that good stuff. So make sure you keep tuning in after your draft is over. For Al Melchior and Heath Cummings, I'm Adam Azer. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you Monday.